I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, and I assist women in optimizing their chances of having an empowering and natural birth experience and a nourishing and healing postpartum. I offer holistic birth preparation and postpartum online courses worldwide for the conscious mama wanting to prepare emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually for her birth and for her postpartum. And if you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com. If you had a natural and empowering birth experience that you would like to share with the world, then you can email me at annathespiritualmidwife@gmail.com, and maybe your story will be featured on the Natural Birth Podcast. Now let's dive into today's episode. Today we have Ashley. Ashley is a mother of three from Queensland, Australia. She is the founder of the Motherhood Circle and the VBAC Homebirth Stories. And today she will share her own VBAC, Vaginal Birth After Cesarean, Free Birth Story. We will start by exploring the reasons to her first two cesareans and the wisdom she gained through and from her birth trauma within the medicalized hospital system. We will then dive into her VBAC free birth story. Ashley never intended to free birth, but due to her comorbidities and being considered high risk, she couldn't find a midwife willing to assist her in a VBAC home birth. More and more women choose to free birth due to not being able to find a care provider that will assist them on their terms or not trusting the maternity system. I believe it's important to share these stories and for the maternity system to realize that it's failing women. Women are sovereign beings, and birth, no matter whether you are considered high or low risk, should be a respected rite of passage and the woman's choices honored and followed. Curious about Ashley? Find her at themotherhoodcircle.com.au or check out her podcast, the VBAC Homebirth Stories Podcast. Hi, Ashley, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
Hey, well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me, Anna.
I am so grateful to have you here. We've been trying for quite some time to find a time to do this recording. You only live maybe an hour or so above me here on the east coast of Australia, but life happens, as you know, best, and we've been struggling, but now we're here, and I'm just so grateful that you've chosen to come on and share your very special story with us today. It's quite different, quite unique, and as I kind of briefly said before turning on the recording, I just feel like you have such a empowering message to share with women about being sovereign and navigating the system. And when the system just won't meet you in your needs, being fully sovereign and taking responsibility for yourself and making your decisions and following your heart, your intuition, and your mama knowledge. I just love it. And so just for our beautiful listeners, you have had three babies, and mm-hmm. two of them, the first two, were cesareans. And I know that you did carry, and maybe still, but maybe not, and you, this is for you to share, but that you have carried a lot of trauma around these two first births that weren't the way you wanted them to go, and you were kind of caught in the system of how things are done out of a fear-based medicalized system. And we won't dwell on those births, but I really want you to share with our listeners why you ended up having a cesarean in the first place, and how come you had it again, and then taking the wisdom from that, because I know you did so much research and healing after those two, and you have so much to gift us. I know that. So with no further ado, Ashley, welcome, and please share with us about your first two births. And
thank you. You know, oh, goodness me. It was about 6 years ago now that I had my first baby, and it's just been like a complete journey of transformation for me as a person and how I live my life now through this experience. Like, no joke, obviously we'll talk about the transformation afterwards, but you know, my first birth was basically, I had no idea anything about birth. My mum, she had vaginal natural births, and she just said, you know, if you have an epidural, you know, you're weak, basically, is what she said to me. So you've got to have a baby vaginally. And I just always thought, you know, if my mum can do it, I can do it. It's a normal thing. You know, C-sections are, you know, you'd seen them with celebrities and that, and that wasn't going to happen to me. And I didn't understand, you know, the reasons why there was so many C-sections. I didn't even know there were so many C-sections happening, or I just thought it was because people wanted them. And that wasn't going to happen to me. I was having a vaginal birth, and, you know, I got put into a public hospital. I wasn't given choices or educated around, you know, just like most first-time mums, I suppose. But essentially, you know, as a bigger woman, how the system would look at a bigger woman or someone with a higher BMI, you know, and that could even be the average woman, depending on, you know, the BMI these days. And some of the things that I hear, I'm like, whoa, you're not even, you know, fat or anything like that. So, you know, I got GD, gestational diabetes, and then eventually by the end of it, I was on insulin. And so the protocol is to, at that time, was to induce. So I was told the whole time I was going to be induced, and I thought, that's really cool. I'm going to have my baby 2 weeks early. Basically, that failed. I won't say that, you know, a lot of the time we hear that we fail as women, or we put that on ourselves, but the procedure failed. And then basically I had a cesarean, basically just because that process didn't work. And the second baby, I fought tirelessly for a VBAC in a public hospital again, thinking if I fight enough, if I learn enough, if I know enough, the evidence supports me, they're going to support me. But they weren't seeing me. They were seeing my risk factors. Yeah. They were seeing high BMI, GD, risk. I spent a lot of time trying to get them to see me as an individual, a unique person who was educated, who had wants and needs, and who was not just a number, but was somebody who had, who was stubborn and driven and, you know, able, you know, not just being seen as, I guess at the time I didn't realize, but they were probably pigeonholing me as a fat, lazy person, is probably how I feel now that I've learned more and read studies about how high BMI people are kind of pigeonholed in the healthcare system. They see you as kind of like a big risk. This is what's going to happen to you. You can have a heart attack. You're at high risk for these things. But that wasn't me. I had perfect health. I'd never had high cholesterol or anything besides the gestational diabetes, which is, puts me at a high risk. And I did get that. But so many women who were low weight, who, you know, because I was going to group meetings and they were all skinny women. And I was like, I was the only big woman in there. I was like, this is weird. But anyways, I didn't realize that till afterwards. I just couldn't understand why they couldn't see me. Yeah. And so I got moved, basically kicked out of hospital at 37 weeks. And then I went to another hospital, another public hospital, and, you know, I'd never met with the obstetrician who was working that day. And from speaking with, you know, people who work at the hospital and having a consult, I was basically told that the obstetrician working on the day had decided that the path for me was another cesarean, despite spontaneous labour and dilating really quickly and having all the great signs that, you know, I was going to be able to vaginally deliver this baby. So I ended up having, you know, a second cesarean that ended with me having a special scar, and which means that I had two scars then. I had one going down to my cervix as well, and they told me I could never labour again, I could never have a vaginal birth, and I'd lost 3 litres of blood. It was very traumatic, and that's where I get into, you know, the deep and dark trauma side of things.
Mm. And I guess with trauma and having a traumatic birth, there's also this opportunity to reach a depth within yourself and a wisdom that you would never come to otherwise. That's the, I guess, if you would ever take a, you know, a pearl of wisdom from any kind of traumatic experience in life, is that it brings you to such a depth that you could ever never really reach yourself if you hadn't had that experience. And so I know you went on a big journey with healing from this birth trauma. Please share with us what you did.
I was in some really dark moments there with my second born, and I only had a 24-month-old. And I thought, I want to save all the women from going through this. Like, people need to know about this stuff, that this happens. I need to save the world, basically. And so I started a little blog, and I started sharing, you know, the things that were struggles for me that I'd never heard about, that people weren't talking about, that, you know, they probably were talking about them, but at this point in time, they weren't, you know, I had never seen anything about it. So, you know, I'm blogging. I decided blogging was my thing, and I was going to share my knowledge and share my story. I'm a storyteller, so hence why I'm here sharing my story. You know, I really connect with people's stories. I think they're inspiring and empowering, and, you know, reading books and things. So I did that. I shared my story, and then I realized I started doing courses. I started to train, to learn, to want to help people even further, like women, mothers. I wanted to do that, and I trained as a postpartum doula. I wanted to set them up for a wonderful postpartum. I learned birth for myself. I, you know, but used that to then educate my audience. So every time I read a new book or I was reading studies, I would share that. And basically, you know, my platform became, I was consuming all this information, and then I was pushing it out to my audience to support them as well on their journey. And so I've always, that's pretty much been my journey for the last 4 years. And I had to do a lot of soul searching, and was going to be able to have my next baby, because we wanted to have 4 children. And, you know, at this point in time, I, you know, was working with doulas and midwives. I was meeting up with, you know, in birth circles, and I was hearing all about natural birth, like outside of the system, in the system. And I was really trying to see how that was going to work for me, what was the best way for me to be able to have a safe vaginal birth. And I spoke with midwives, and I wasn't able to find midwives to support me on my journey, because, you know, home birthing in Australia is, it's illegal, you know, that it's a minefield for women. For the midwives, actually, in Australia here.
Yes.
So I came across free birthing, and I thought that was pretty radical, and I thought that was pretty brave and pretty courageous, and I thought, I don't have the strength inside me to do that. But I listened to the podcast, and I kept listening and consuming information and stories, and it was actually, I learned so much information about women in that time, and I started to take small steps towards that path, I suppose. But the complete journey that I've come through from 6 years ago, from having my first baby, from being out of control and powerless and being a yes woman and doing everything that, you know, I was told to do and being the perfect patient, to now being a woman who is
living her life the way that she wants to, I feel so powerful and so free. And it can be scary to make these choices. You know, like I've just recently pulled my child out of school because the schooling system wasn't working for her. She's a highly sensitive person, and we tried to work with the school and they were not coming to the party. So it is coming full circle, and, you know, my child is now at home with me, where everything, I'm feeling so free, and like I can live this life that I want to create, that my husband and I want to create, not this is the life that is set out for you. You must do this because this is normal. You know, this is what we do in society. So I feel really free from having a free birth, which is really exciting, because that's not what I thought free birth was, but it actually is.
Yeah,
quite freeing.
And before we dive into that story, which I just can't wait to hear, I just really want to, like, you know, emphasize this, that women who do choose to either, you know, step out of the system or to work within the system, but on their own terms. Now, you try that, and I know that you really try to find a midwife to help you have a home birth, and you know, previously the second birth, you tried really hard to have a vaginal natural birth in the hospital system, and you were not very well cared for in the system. And so essentially the system failed you there. And just as you said, in Australia and in many countries, in most places around the world, it's still a big witch hunt on midwives, even if you are especially if you are an independent midwife. And I think it's really important for women to know that. And essentially, you know, you should be able to do all of your own choices within the system. The system should support you in that and just go, this woman is educated. She's making informed decisions. Yes, it's totally against all of our advice that, you know, the mainstream tells you to do, but it's her choice and we'll support her. And unfortunately, the system is failing women like yourself over and over again because of the regulations. So please let us dive on in to your free birth story. I can't wait to hear it.
Absolutely. When did I fall pregnant? Last year. It was the start of last year when we fell pregnant just before the whole COVID thing happened here in Australia. And I fell pregnant in February last year, 2020. And I went into it knowing that I was going to be having a free birth, as, you know, we've talked about. And also because I dive so much into the free birth system, or, you know, the view, and I knew that the midwives were going to have a self-interest in, I don't want to put it that way as in this, you know, but we all have a self-interest in the choices we make, you know. I didn't want to have someone at my birth anyways that was going to feel like they could lose their home or their livelihood or their business and transfer me to hospital sooner. So I was very much aware that that was a possibility, and because through the conversations while I was pregnant, you know, these things were coming up, like even doulas were having these conversations with me, and I was like, I don't want that to happen. That's what happened to me in the hospital system. That's why the doctors pushed me in for a cesarean. So I did not want that to happen again, because I wanted to be in my full power and control. But when I got pregnant, I was tossing up between having a doula present or not, because I wanted to take full responsibility for myself. But then I was a little bit scared about retained placenta, postpartum hemorrhage. You know, I started my podcast interviewing women about VBAC home birth because there was not another podcast around where it was specifically around VBAC home birth, and I wanted to educate myself, be inspired and empowered. And, you know, I got to interview amazing, passionate people like Rachel Reed, people like Melanie Jackson, who had done a free birth PhD on why women choose free birth when they're high risk, and then Hazel Keedle, who's a VBAC researcher. And so I'm speaking to these like highly intelligent women who are working in the space of home birth or free birth or VBAC, or, you know, everything that I wanted to achieve. And they've studied, like they've spent time studying these things. And so they gave me a lot of confidence and information on my journey. I wanted to be surrounded by everything that I'd learned in the last 4 years. I needed to be surrounded by positive people, no toxic energy. I wanted to stay in my bubble. I only wanted to listen to positive stories. I wanted to be connected to my tribe. I wanted to have a really wonderful postpartum this time because I had studied as a postpartum doula. You know, I couldn't teach women how to have amazing postpartums and then not step up for myself, right? That would be pretty hypocritical and not like living to my integrity. So, you know, I had to make this like an epic situation. You know, this could be my last birth. This could be my last opportunity to have the birth on my terms. So I found a doula who, you know, a lot of the doulas, there was maybe about five or six who were on the list who were free birth doulas. And I met with a few of them and, you know, some people were moving overseas, some people, one was pregnant, and I ended up, you know, because of that situation, I ended up with one person left on the list and who I could choose. When we met her, she was the most amazing, you know, connection and, you know, said all the right things and we felt really connected. And so that was like at 5 or 6 weeks. I already had a free birth doula as if I was, you know, looking for a midwife. And at the same time, I was still going back to some of the midwives just to check, you know, is this a possibility? Because I did have a lot of fear come up during my pregnancy that I thought that I'd worked through before I fell pregnant, but having HG and feeling vulnerable and knowing in myself that the mindset work was the most important thing for me.
Yeah.
I really wanted to have that extra support. And so, you know, I reached out to a few midwives to see if there was going to be extra support available to get prenatal visits because I knew I needed that connection and I maybe wanted a little bit of prenatal care. And it was impossible for me to find somebody who was willing to take me on. I was a bit disappointed about that I couldn't find. And also, you know, I couldn't just go to the GP and get that care. I found that if I didn't play in the system that a lot of people weren't willing to support me or they were afraid to support me.
Yeah.
You know, one midwife who was local ended up calling her insurance company, you know, because there's so much concern and worry about their jobs because they've seen the witch hunt happen with their colleagues and, you know, them being under investigation for a whole year, you know, and losing all these clients and not being able to support women. So I was very much aware and it was very frustrating for me as well because then I wasn't again able to get any of the support. And, you know, that's the problem where the system does fail women is they say that it's, you know, informed consent, you can do this. But a lot of the time, unless you play the game and you do what they want, they're not willing to give you what you need. So that made me more determined to have a free birth. I was like, well, okay. Okay, fine. Because again, I feel like I'm being rejected again. So, you know, that kind of gave me a bit more pep in my step to this is the right path for me because I don't have any resistance on this path. And I had created a circle of support with people over the last 4 years who really stood up and, you know, emotionally supported me. So, because I had doula friends and I had, you know, birth educators and I had midwives who I'd become friends with. And so I was able to connect with those women and I had to kind of break through my mindset barriers of I'm not worthy. I don't deserve this sort of support. I like to talk about mindset stuff. So because that is me, it's pretty much what I go through. And I had my doula and I secured another doula, a student doula, underneath my doula, and she was going to be a birth photographer. She was the birth photographer as well as part of the package. And, you know, I was working through my fears throughout with my husband and he's so calm and relaxing and he's the one that, you know, kind of talked me into the free birth. And he's, you know, I was listening. He's like, I believe in you and yeah, it'll be fine. And I'm like, but what if this happens? And he's like, yeah, it'll be fine. I don't feel like that's going to happen. It's going to be fine. And I was like, but you don't even know about this. And he's like, it's fine. And because I'm the complete, we're very opposite personalities. Like he's very calm and mellow. And I'm like, need to know, have a plan, want to be organized, need to know every step of the way, very controlled. And so that's why we work really well together because I do all the educating and everything and then I give the information to him and he's really calm and level-headed about everything. And so he was a really great support for me practically and emotionally through my pregnancy. And I feel like we had a really strong connection, which was so beautiful. And the whole COVID thing happened, which made it a lot easier for me to call the doctor, the GP, and to say, hey, can I get a scan? And I didn't have to go in and see him. So after all my stress and everything about not getting prenatal care, I was able to obtain the prenatal care that I wanted through the GP. So that worked out really well. I just called him up and, you know, he would just leave the note at the desk for me and I could go get my scan and it was no issue. So that was really cool. COVID worked well for me, you know, staying home. I didn't have to go anywhere because I was sick. And then I got the care that I wanted and I didn't have to answer to anybody. And yeah, that was a really wonderful experience. And I kept saying to my husband, like, this is great. Like, I don't have to go to the hospital. I don't have to have a fight or an argument. I can just relax. But yes, I ended up, my first two babies I had at 38 plus 5 weeks, and I had my second baby at 40 weeks spontaneous labor. So the first one was through, you know, no labor or anything like that, and the second one was spontaneous labor. So I'm thinking, how on earth am I going to survive until 40 weeks? And I could even go to like 42 weeks, like. And then it was just crazy. I was experiencing backache, you know, like that cramping, the period backache cramping and the front cramping. And I thought, I never experienced this through my other pregnancy. And then I found an old post on Facebook, thanks to Facebook, you know, in those groups. And I thought, yeah. Oh, yes, I did. I never had this. Oh, yes, I did. And I found these old posts in the VBAC group from, you know, 4 years ago. And I was like, yeah, I did. I just can't remember. Mm. And I'm waiting for the same symptoms as I had with my first baby, which was, you know, I did have a cervical stretch and sweep with my second baby that I did go into labor with. So I'm thinking maybe that's why I went into labor at 40 weeks. You know, maybe it's going to be longer this time because I'm not having this stretch and sweep. And I'm thinking, when's the cervical plug going to happen? You know, the last weeks you're always looking for signs, what's happening. And, you know, one morning, it was in the middle of the morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. I just rolled on my side and I was 38 weeks and I felt a pull and then all this water gushed out on my bed. And I was like, did I just break something? I literally thought I did something because I did roll.
and
I wasn't expecting it. And it's funny because I went into spontaneous labor at 4. It was at 4 a.m. The same thing happened with my last baby at 4 a.m. as well. Oh. And 4 was my favorite number. So I just wanted to share that because I love how weird that is. And I just basically waddled out. I jumped up as quick. I'd never jumped so quick while I was pregnant out of the bed. I was like, oh my God. And I waddled down, you know, calling out to my husband because he was sleeping on the couch with a little one at the time. And he came running down. He said, what's wrong? You know, I said, I think my water broke, but I'd never had it happen spontaneously before. So there was no denying that my water had broken because there was huge gushes everywhere and it was constantly coming out, leaking everywhere. And I was walking up and down the hallway, which thankfully is lino, to the toilet, and I would sit on the toilet and then I'd get back up in another gush. And so my husband's behind me cleaning it up and then I'm keep just dropping more as I go past. And it was, I don't know why I kept walking, but I did. And I was nervous and excited and I was shaking. And I think the biggest thing that scared me the most was, because with my second baby, they broke my waters in hospital, and that was a huge reason in my mind for why, you know, I ended up in a cesarean. So I knew that with my waters breaking that I was on a timer. I didn't know how long my contractions were going to take to start. So I'm already panicking at that point, like, oh my God, they've got to start, you know, within a certain time frame, and, oh, it's going to be harder for baby to get down. I'm already in this mindset of thinking about all these things. So I call my doula and she just basically lets me know to just go back to bed and call her, you know, when contractions start and just to relax and don't stress. And so I was like, I know that's the advice, but what the hell?
I was just going to say, yeah, that's easier said than done.
I know. I was like, are you serious? Like, I couldn't even believe that it had happened at 38 weeks. Like, honestly, I was so excited. And also because it was 5 days after Halloween and I've always wanted to have a Halloween baby. And I was so uncomfortable. So it was just great that it was happening. And I did. I went and laid back on my bed after my husband had, you know, cleaned and put some towels down. I was just in excruciating pain. I'd never felt this way in either of my pregnancies or birth before. It was just, I couldn't do anything to get comfortable. Laying on my side was uncomfortable. Laying on my back, sitting up was uncomfortable. Walking was uncomfortable. It was just, I don't even know why, but it was just so uncomfortable. And within 30 minutes of the waters breaking, my contraction started, which was, and when they start, my contractions from my first two births, from my second birth and this one, they're the same. They start and that's it. Like, it's not like, oh, it starts and it's an hour or every half an hour. Or it's literally like it will start and it happens like every 10 minutes kind of thing. And then it's like every five, like it's on. And it's not like it builds up, it gets stronger. It's like, that's it pretty much. Like, this is pretty much what you feel. And so it was intense from the start. I was like, whoa, okay. And it was, I guess I had a lot of fear inside me, or, you know, a lot of tension or concern or whatever was happening. I don't know what was happening, but I was really in a lot of pain for the first couple of hours, and my children were still sleeping, but they got woken up from my husband deciding to, we hadn't set up my birth area because I wasn't having a baby till 40 weeks and that was our living space. So my husband was like, I think I better get the birth pool ready once I started contracting. I was like, that's a good idea. Go, go, go. And because we'd already done a practice run, we knew that it was going to take at least an hour to get the pool filled. Which was really cool because I had the kids in there, you know, on our practice run with little photos and me pretending to be in labor. And it was cool. It was really cool. So my husband went and got that sorted, and then he called my sister to come. Well, I think my kids were running around a little bit, but energetically we had always planned for them to stay with us, but I knew that maybe I wasn't going to be able to handle them energetically because I'm really sensitive to energy. Mm. So we had a number of people lined up to take them, and my best friend at the time, she'd got a cold, her whole family was down, so she was chopped. So then we thought, okay, fortunately, I know we had all these people planned. Our in-laws and everyone lived too far away, so my sister had just volunteered that week to come. So my husband called her, and we call back my doula and, you know, let her know that we wanted her to come, but we'll wait for our second doula and birth photographer to come a bit later. I didn't want heaps of people to come and I didn't want lots of energy. I was really adamant about the kind of energy I wanted in my space. I made that quite clear to my doulas throughout my journey. I really wanted to take ownership of my birth. I really wanted to have a physiological birth, an undisturbed birth. I wanted to do it on my terms, and I didn't want people suggesting things, because I talked to Rachel Reed about physiological birth, that I knew that was my best chance at having the safest delivery at home without a midwife and that. So I didn't want anyone suggesting anything. I didn't want anyone saying move into this position or maybe you should go here. And I made that quite clear throughout the whole thing. And I knew my other doula was a little bit excited. So I just said, you know, let's hold off on her. So my doula came and she was really calm and placid. And I think once my sister came and my children were removed, I was able to calm down and I got in the pool and I was still freaking out though in my mind. I was like, this is so painful. Like, eventually my second doula came and they were, you know, I kept looking at my doula like, is this normal? Like, this is painful. And I kept thinking, I really wish I'd had like a cesarean or an epidural right now. I was thinking, why would anyone in their right mind go through this? And it was so weird. I was thinking, there's no way I can do this. I can't do this. And I was sitting in my pool and I was holding my doula's hand and I was holding a comb and I was squeezing it. And I was just working through deep breathing, deep breathing, deep breathing. But of course, the mindset wasn't there yet. I was still in a place of fear and pain. And I don't know what happens. I think I can only think it was an energy shift. Eventually, my body must have calmed down because I jump into adrenaline really quickly and I kind of sit there for a long time as well. Like maybe there was cortisol running around for a while, or it was only in a space of 2 hours. So from the time that my waters broke to, you know, maybe 6 o'clock in the morning, I feel that as soon as I got past that 2 hour mark, I basically just shift into a different space within my body. Mm. And then I don't feel any pain. I just feel, here it comes again. And I just feel, here we go, like whatever. I don't even feel like I feel any pain or anything. It's just something's, you know, you can feel like the tenseness of the build up of the wave and that, but you're deep breathing and I've got my calm music and I'm looking at my affirmations on my wall. And I'm in my beautiful pool and I'm in the positions I want to be in and no one's talking to me. Everyone's just sitting around relaxing and I'm feeling really happy and safe and calm. And I was pushing. I felt like my body was pushing, started pushing really early. And, you know, a couple hours into labor, I'm feeling like I need to do a poo. So I'm going from being on my back to getting onto my knees, leaning over the pool, and my body's just pushing so hard and, you know, little poos are coming out and my poor husband's having to clean them up. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. And he's like, oh, this is gross. And he still talks about it now, how gross it was. And that's what I was in my mind. I just have to do these poos. I'm like, I just constantly for like hours, every fourth or fifth contraction, that's what's happening because it, you know, I'm pushing, I'm actually pooing in the pool.
Yeah.
And so I'm going from relaxing on my back to these calmer contractions, I suppose, to these, this next contraction is a full contraction of pushing, but it feels good. So I'm not in any pain. It's just like, this is nice. I'm having to get onto my knees now and pushing. And actually that felt nicer than actually the other contractions. And I just keep thinking like, is this normal? Is baby coming? Is anything happening? Like this is just going through my mind while it's happening. And I'm asking, you know, looking at my doula, like, this is normal, right? And she's like, yeah, you know. And you know, there was a time where they said, oh, let's give you and your husband. They actually did mention that because I wasn't able to wee during my labor. Mm. So they were trying to get me to wee. And I was like, damn, like, why did they ask that? I couldn't wee. So the whole, for hours, I was like trying to get myself to wee. Like, have you weed? No, I haven't. And so I'm thinking about all these things. Now it's going to stop the baby's head from coming down. And this is the thing that I didn't want to happen because I knew how susceptible women are in birth from everything I'd read and, you know, the interviews and everything I'd done. And the birth stories I'd heard, you know, I didn't want to think about any of that sort of stuff. So now I'm back into my mind of thinking I need to wee because if I don't wee, which takes me away from my belief in birth will happen, how it happens, and not having to worry about if there's a cervical lip or what position baby's in, because that's not physiological birth. That's getting in the mindset of problems and worrying about that sort of thing. So my doulas said, well, why don't we let you and your husband have some intimate time, you know? And I said, okay, fine. Out they went. And so we did actually have some intimate time. And, you know, I never thought this would happen. I'd listened to Orgasmic Birth and I'd, you know, told my husband about it, you know, because it's pretty out there. I was like, you know, this is what some women do in birth and some people. And my husband was like, that sounds really cool. So he, I suppose in his mind, the whole time he's thinking that we're going to have sex or something in birth because I had mentioned it. And I guess he's really hopeful. But we did not end up having sex, but you know, he was rubbing me and that was pleasurable. And I was rubbing him and, you know, because I was trying to wee. And so then it was like pleasurable because we were doing that, obviously, and there was no one else around. They were outside and we were inside, and it was really intimate for my husband and I to have that time. So he was in my birth space with me, and he was holding me and supporting me. And that was really nice as well, because he was my key person in birth, and we didn't get that with my other births. You know, we were very separated and separate, and he had no involvement. And that was really nice for me to have that safe space and be able to rely on him like that, you know, just lay back on him. And I did have some pain in my back, but I wouldn't call it pain. I'd call it more annoyance, which obviously I had a posterior baby. I'm pretty sure she was ROT. So I had the whole time, I suppose maybe that's why my contractions weren't annoying me, because my back was annoying me, but it was more like my leg was numb. And I kept saying, oh, my leg, it's so numb and it's so annoying. I said, can we chop my leg off? Like, it, you know, just me joking around. But I was so relaxed that I was just able to say things like, you know, my doula's are laughing. Like, I'm always like, get rid of my leg, it's so annoying. And it was like as if you'd been sitting on your leg and it's gone numb. And I kept trying to move positions thinking that that's what the issue was. But now I realized that it was the baby sitting on my nerves, and I'm, no one said that to me at the time, and I'm just like, oh my god, like I'm obviously sitting on my leg and making it numb, but no, it was the baby.
Do you want a natural birth, mama? Then the natural birth course might be for you. Do you see birth as a rite of passage and an important and transformational event that you'd like to feel fully empowered in meeting? Are you, like many other women, realizing that it is time to take back your power as a birthing woman in the birth space and birth your baby your way? Would you like to feel calm and confident as you birth your baby with all the tools you need in order to meet the labor sensations naturally and be ready body, mind, and soul? Do you deeply down know that your body was made to birth your baby and that you have all the inherent power and inner wisdom to do so? Are you looking for holistic midwifery wisdom and guidance to assist you and give you all the evidence-based information you need in order to feel fully sovereign in your decision-making around your pregnancy and upcoming birth? Then the Natural Birth Course is for you. Find out more at thenaturalbirthcourse.com.
At one point towards the end of the birth, I said to my husband, oh, can you, like, I think the baby's coming down. Can you check? Can you, you know, put your fingers up there? I know he has no idea what he's doing, but I just want him to check for me. And he's saying, oh, I don't know. He's not really confident, but he gives it a try anyways. And he puts his fingers up there and he says, oh, it feels like a kiwi fruit, like, or it could be a muscle. I don't know. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, maybe it's a prolapse. Maybe I'm having a prolapse from all this pushing. And I'm not, it's not in my control. Like, I'm not sitting there pushing. My body's doing all this heavy pushing for me. And I'm thinking, okay, well, let's just forget about that. I said to him, let's just forget, because you have no idea what you're talking about. And then my doula said, okay, you know, because it'd been a couple of hours, I said, okay, well, we're going to go outside and just chill out for a bit and you guys have some more time together. And my husband was in the pool again and we're just sitting around talking. And it's so funny because I wish I'd had a video of the whole birth, because I don't know, it just seems like I was just like floating around a pool, just like talking and just chilling. Like, I don't remember it being a troublesome, you know, problematic situation. It was just like me chilling in my pool, like getting water brought to me or little bits of lemonade, and my husband, you know, people doing, you know, my doulas were doing acupressure on my back, which was really nice every now and then. And we were sitting in the tub for, you know, a while by ourselves, you know, and then I said to my husband, I'm pretty sure the head's like right there, it's coming out. And he put his fingers back in again. He's like, Yeah, maybe. And I'm like, well, if it's not the head, what could it be? And I'm like, oh, my God, I need to do, like, this big poo, like this huge poo. And I suppose before this part with my husband happened, before the doulas had left, that's what I was saying, and they were laughing at me again. I'm like, I basically said, like, I'm sick of doing shits. Like, I need to shit the baby out because this is ridiculous how many poos I'm doing. I just feel like I'm doing this massive poo. But what I didn't realize was the big poo was actually the baby's head.
Yeah.
It felt like obviously I was pushing the baby's head down because I'd never had that experience before. It just felt like a big poo, but it was the baby's head being pushed the way down. And I didn't even click onto that because the whole time I'd had that feeling I was doing little poos, but that wasn't the purpose of the pushing. The purpose of the pushing, obviously, the whole time was moving baby around, moving her down and doing all the work to get her into the right position because she had such a long way to go and she had had the waters broken already, so she didn't have any help from the fluids to get her in position. And so then when, you know, she'd been pushed all the way down, I was like, okay, I think the baby's head's coming out right now. And then it was just by chance that I was pushing, like maybe grunting a little bit, that the doula said, you know, how's it going? And my husband said, I think the baby's head's here. And they came in excitedly and, you know, said, yep, the baby's coming. Like, it's right here. Whoa, they couldn't believe it. And they said to me, they didn't say this to me right then, but they said to me later that it was one of those births that they had attended. Well, my main doula, who had seen, you know, quite a few births, that she wasn't sure whether I was still in pre-labor because I was chilling so much through the birth, because I was just relaxed and so calm and joking and stuff, that I was either in pre-labor and just ages away from having a baby, or if I was right there and about to have a baby. And I thought that was really cool that she said that, because I never knew what kind of birth I was going to be. And you always hear these stories of, you know, in the movies of women screaming and carrying on. And I thought it was so nice for me to have that experience of being so calm and relaxed and peaceful, and people not to even realize that I'm in labor, kind of thing, because I'm so relaxed. And that's not the experience that you get portrayed back to you about birth, especially when you're in the system, which, you know, after my experience, I'm so surprised at how much of a big deal birth kind of is, because to me it's such an easy, natural thing that we go through after my experience. Anyway, so the doulas came in. Oh, I should get back to the birth. So the doulas came in and they were so surprised that the head was right there. And I don't know how long it actually was, but it was between 10 and 20 minutes of the head coming in and coming out. And you know, that was the painful part for me, because there was a lot of stretching happening there. You know, the babies, and I believe the head's popped out now, because this is, you know, this feels like ripping, you know. You can't explain it. The ring of fire, that doesn't really give a great description to me of what I experienced. I feel like it was more ripping of paper is how I experienced it. And so, you know, I guess the baby's doing what she needs to do. She's coming in and out, coming in and out. And eventually the whole head came through. And then with the next push, the shoulders came out. And then at that point, my contraction, well, my doula did actually say, don't touch the head, to my husband. And I just kind of went into complete shock at that point, I suppose. And why, what's wrong? Why can't we touch the head? And I knew about shoulder dysocia and if the baby's, you know, oh, sorry, I knew about breech, and I knew that you don't touch breech babies in case they take a breath. So I'm thinking maybe that's the same situation here. If we touch the baby, then maybe she'll take a big breath and they can't breathe, you know, going to take in water. And so I'm kind of going back into that mode of like trying to analyze why she said that, because there was no conversation around that during our prenatal support. And plus I'd seen so many videos of babies being born where the mum's encouraged to touch the head and people, you know, so I was a little bit unsure about that. My husband was a little bit unsure. He was kind of told to move back. And my contractions completely stopped at that point. And I was like, you know, she's out to about her waist and her head and everything's out. And then the contractions stop. And then, you know, I'm told to just give her a little bit of a push. And I am thinking in my head, every birth video that I've watched, when the baby gets halfway out, it just slides out. And I'm thinking, and then I go into panic mode. I'm like, why is this not happening? And why is she, and I'm looking at my doula, why is this not happening? What is happening? And going into question, and I'm starting to freak out a bit. Is this normal? And, you know, it probably was only a few minutes, but there was a bit of panic in the room by the doula. And then the other doula was getting panicked because she's the student. And my husband and I are looking at each other like, and I'm saying to him, can you give her a pull? Like, can you pull her out? Like, all of a sudden we've had this calm birthing experience all to this panicking situation, which is what I did not want to happen. But eventually after, purple pushing for a while because I was kind of blacking out, she eventually just popped out and I was like, okay. My husband grabbed her, popped her on my chest, and I was like, oh, you know, she was purple and beautiful. And I found out she was a girl because we didn't know what we were having. And, you know, I touched her and I said, it's a girl. And he said, yes, it's a girl. And I said, oh, yay. You know, I knew she was a girl intuitively. And I held her on my belly. And then my doula said to me, you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be alarm or, you know, make an alarm here, but I think that there's something wrong with her breathing. And I was like, okay. She said, you know, I think we should call an ambulance. And I was like, I guess it happened in a split second. You know, of course I was suggestible in that time. I just said, okay, fine, I trust you. Like, that's the reason why I've hired you to help me through that placenta and the, you know, if there's anything wrong, you've been to hundreds of births or whatever it was that she'd been to. And so I trusted that she knew what was normal. So we called the ambulance and the baby ambulance got there, and I was sitting in the pool, and she said to my doula, suggested we cut the umbilical cord, so that my husband can hold the baby outside of the birthing pool. And as soon as my husband picked her up, because she was breathing, like she was struggling to breathe a little bit. She was breathing, but she was just labored, like, you know, struggling a little bit. So she probably just had some fluid on her lungs that she needed to, like, cry. She hadn't had enough time to kind of, she hadn't cried or anything. It was literally like a split second, I feel like, that decision was made without allowing any time to. And if I could go back, I would have made a different choice and decision with that. But I did what I could at the time with the best that we had. And as soon as my husband picked her up and held her, she just started screaming. So the ambulance was already outside the front door. But she was fully awake at that point and had done a huge scream. And she, you know, she was perfectly fine and healthy. So I was feeling calmer now, and the ambulance came in, the guy came in, and he was really calm and cool and collected and really respectful. And then I was like, my doula suggested that maybe I get out of the birth pool because there was quite a lot of blood in there, and I couldn't find my placenta. So I stood up and I started feeling a bit dizzy. And so then it was kind of, then my doula suggested that maybe the ambulance guy give me a, is it Syntocin or Pintocin here in Australia? I can't remember, but one of them.
Syntocin.
So then she suggested that he give me the Syntocin. So then I had some Syntocin and I'm sitting on the couch, but there's no one's touching my belly or anything, trying to massage the placenta out. And I'm kind of just sitting there. He doesn't know what he's doing because he's a baby doctor and a baby ambulance guy, and he's just come in a van. So then he has to call another ambulance because, you know, I'm bleeding a bit. And then that ambulance, by the time, basically we had to end up having like four ambulances called. So by the time the fourth ambulance came, because their priority is to get your blood pressure or make sure you're stable. So they're worrying about getting blood pressure and they're asking me all these questions. And like this silly lady. I will say that because she was saying, I'm not judgmental, but what was your prenatal care? And I said, we just need to know this. And I said, I didn't feel judged until she had basically said that to me. And I said to her, well, I had a scan at 8 weeks and I had a scan at 20 weeks and I had some bloods done at 20 weeks. And she said, so you didn't have any prenatal care then? I said, what do you mean? Like, I had prenatal care. That's like, what else do you get? Like, you get blood pressure tests and a few urine tests. But she said, look, I'm not judging you, but what was your prenatal, you didn't get any. And I was like, okay, like, we obviously have different views on prenatal care. And that felt really uncomfortable, but there was a lot of things, a lot of people in the space at that point and a lot of people asking questions. And it took about 2 hours for me to finally be transferred, maybe about 2.5 hours to be transferred to hospital. And I only live about in an ambulance, maybe 7 minutes away from a hospital. So I always had this belief that if you're in an emergency situation that you're going to be transferred to hospital really quickly. But I found that they weren't necessarily trained in home birth or how to handle a woman in that situation.
I've had a few of those stories where women do call the ambulance for some reason, and they, there is a course. There's an online course for ambulance personnel on how to, if you accidentally, need to help a woman either, have a baby or after. But it's not very extensive, and they do their best, but they are just, they don't understand, for example, how important is to birth the placenta. They, might think that it's more important to take care of the baby, even though the baby's perfectly fine, or they might think that taking your blood pressure and putting you on a stretcher is more important than just sitting down squatting and birthing your placenta before leaving. For example, I mean, obviously you had a retained placenta, but there's a lot of those little mistakes that they don't understand the physiology around birth. And this again is like obviously why you wanted to have a midwife who actually is trained. And doulas are amazing. And some doulas know more than other doulas, but they're obviously not trained fully to handle all of these emergencies or really truly understand maybe all the aspects that can go wrong.
Absolutely. And my doula didn't do any medical stuff. She never touched me. She never put her hands inside me or anything like that. So she couldn't do any of the medical side either. So in that situation, obviously I felt safe the whole time because I knew I was only minutes away from the hospital. I knew that, I was safe. They weren't panicked until half an hour before we're transporting, then they're starting to panic when the next teams are coming, and you can tell the senior, the feeling of this is like the junior A team and this is like the team.
Yeah.
When the senior people come and they're like, people are listening to them and they're like, taking over, and you're like, okay, now I'm safe. Like, now I'm with people who really know what they're doing. But by that time, I suppose I really needed, those people. And the reason why they got there, why I had to wait, was because they needed blood to transfer me. Obviously, if we could, it's interesting to understand. I don't even know what their protocols or policies are, but they needed to get me what they would call stable before they could get me to hospital. Whereas in my opinion, I think you need to get the person to hospital where they can actually be helped. Like, the problem was I needed to have my placenta removed. That's what's causing the bleeding. Then worry about all the other stuff. If they'd done that in the first 10 minutes, I wouldn't have lost hardly any blood. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We would have had the placenta removed. But so by the time I get to the hospital, they're panicked because they've known about me coming in for hours. The obstetrician is just, her eyes, like, I'll never forget, her eyes are just wide. Like, she was, whoa. And I've had conversations with her since, because, I ended up staying in hospital for 5 days. But I ended up, getting my placenta removed. They don't know why I had a retained placenta. I did ask them. They were sending it away for, investigation. I didn't get any information back from them in regards to the reason why. I did have some theories myself, like, obviously my birth was disturbed. There was a lot of interruption. with what my doula had said, with obviously adrenaline being burst into my system at that point, with the ambulance guy coming, me being completely, I never had that, oh, my baby's here and she's safe and everything. It was taken, I feel like that moment was taken away from me as soon as she was born. That was said to me. So I never got a chance to, you know, make that decision on my own, whether my baby, you know, whether my baby, that was like straight away it was said to me. The hospital, the ambulance guy did clear my baby, you know, within 15 minutes of being there, or within the first half an hour of being there, he cleared her and said she was fine. So I imagine once she'd had that big cry, she'd cleared a lot of the gunk out of her system. And, you know, because it was so quick, you know, she didn't even have a time to kind of wake up or anything like that. So,
and the really important things to say here, obviously I wasn't there. I don't know how long, you know, the doula did look at your baby, for example. Sometimes when you've had a baby, you don't even know yourself because you're in that kind of, time doesn't exist, absolutely. Right? But water births, a lot of babies are quite chilled. Like a lot of babies actually don't breathe instantaneously. A lot of them can be really alert but not breathe, for example, and look around and just, and it takes them maybe a minute or maybe even a bit longer sometimes. And they're still getting that pulsation from the cord and everything. And so, and then sometimes you just need to, what you just did, you know, your partner picked her up and then they flung out their arms and they take a big breath. And it sounds like that's exactly what she did.
Yeah.
And also, I also want to really reiterate how important that moment is for you to actually have a normal physiological third stage. So we need to stay really safe and quiet and snug after the baby's born. Otherwise, just, which might have happened for you, you get a fright and that turns off the oxytocin and puts on adrenaline, and it can be a cause of both hemorrhaging and not, you know, your placenta not releasing. So that could definitely be a part of why you had a retained placenta. And also having had previous cesareans can be a risk factor of having retained placenta. And obviously, as you said before, you know, there was a fear around the postpartum and the placenta. And, you know, whatever we believe, obviously this is not a medical, you know, there's no research around this, but you know, it could be also something that you create because you have the fear around it. And that's why I'm such a big advocate about really facing your fears antenatally and daring to look at them and see how you can work with them before you have your birth, because otherwise it might actually materialize as well.
Absolutely. It's interesting because you'll never know, you know, it's one of those things. And so you just have to take, like you say, the positives from that experience. What did I learn from that experience? And, you know, I ended up being in hospital for 5 days and my baby was put into special care because my husband did go to the hospital. And I think I know the reason she went in special care was a precaution. They did say she still had a bit of labored breathing and she went on CPAP for 12 hours. But I spoke with a pediatrician afterwards because I ended up going into surgery, had my placenta removed. Then I went into the ICU for 12 hours just because my blood pressure, obviously I had lost so much blood. That was their protocol. I call it, I graduated from ICU and I went into the birthing unit for 12 hours to be watched. And then I graduated from there and I went into maternity, but my baby was in special care. And so that was a new experience for me as well. And I had a lot of, what did I do? Did I put my baby in danger? You know, did I put myself in danger? Had I made a bad choice? La, 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 la. It was, I spoke with, you know, and it's amazing how different you feel. Like at this moment, you can barely talk. You know, you're just waking up from being put under, like I went under general anesthetic. And I was awake the whole time. Afterwards talking to all the staff and everything, you know, I had barely had any sleep in that, but how quickly your health gets better in that short period of time. But it feels like you've been in there for weeks, like even though it's only a matter of days in the hospital, because things happen so quickly in hospital. And so they might say to you, you know, your baby's on CPAP today. She's, we got to do formula. We got to do this. And then tomorrow it's like a completely, like not even tomorrow, it's like 12 hours time. It's a completely different information they're giving you. And so you're going through this like whirl of all this information through this time. But I will say, I'm not going to go into the whole situation at the hospital, but I will say that, you know, after I spoke to the pediatricians, they said to me, look, it was just a precaution because you'd come in, you know, from a home birth and we didn't know what kind of prenatal care, you know, the baby had had and you'd had. And, you know, you were in surgery, so we wanted to look after the baby kind of thing. So I found that that matched up a lot with how I was being treated in my first two pregnancies. Yeah. They're very risk adverse. And so rather than see what happens to the baby, see if there's anything wrong with the baby, it was, we're going to do this as a precaution. We're going to give her antibiotics as a precaution. And so she was put on antibiotics because I had a water birth, so she may have an infection. So they gave her antibiotics and we're going to put her in CPAP because she's having a little bit and then this could happen, but maybe it won't happen. And then she had, she was borderline jaundice. So then it was when she was about to graduate from special care, then it was like, oh, maybe we should just keep her for jaundice. And it just felt like a never ending kind of situation there. So I had a very healing time in the hospital from my first birth, which I had a lot of trauma from my first and second birth at that hospital. They were very respectful for me, to me. They were still very risk adverse, but I kind of saw the system in a different way. It wasn't personal. I had felt very, it was very personal with my first two births. Like I felt like they had done this to me, which they had, it, they had, but it wasn't because they looked at me and said, I'm going to get you, lady. Mm. It was just, we do this to everyone and this is what we do. If you tick these boxes, we're going to do that to you. And that's how we work because we're a system and we're a factory and we've got to pump all these people out. And it's not personal, but we're working 12-hour days because I'm sitting there listening to them. How many hours are you working today? I'm doing a 12-hour shift. How many days are you working? I'm doing a 14-week roster, whatever it is, you know. And it was like this workaholic environment and, you know, they're seeing so many people and they're trying to help so many people. And so I kind of was miraculously healed so much from my first couple of birth experiences. And then with my baby being in special care, I was seeing how medicalized and how risk adverse they were and how they weren't doing informed consent. They were just pumping whatever they wanted to him, to my beautiful, healthy baby who I wanted to breastfeed and never have any formula, and all these things were happening out of my control. And then I had to advocate for myself and my baby for that side of things. But then they were bending over backwards for me in the obstetric team because they couldn't believe that I had chosen a free birth over having a hospital birth because of my birth trauma and how I was treated the first time. But they were taking it so seriously that they wanted to build that relationship back. And so I found that very respectful and very healing. And, you know, it was all I ever wanted in my first couple of births. So I came back a full healing, and I had a lot of trauma in my childhood as well that I felt that I was healed from in many ways as well, which was really interesting for me. And even though I walked out of there, you know, after I had another 3-liter blood loss and anemic and, you know, having a bit of a journey to get back to and not having the ending experience of what I wanted. Of course, I wanted to have a full home birth, you know, with the physiological, you know, the golden hour with my baby and being in bed and all that wonderful stuff. But I didn't get that. But what I did get was I birthed a 4.5 kilo baby out of my vagina with no tearing. She was healthy. I was healthy. I felt powerful. I felt strong. I felt healed. I felt whole. I didn't feel broken from having surgery across my stomach. I felt like a whole person, which was a wonderful experience. And then I look back at my birth, and this is what I say all the time, and I don't want to take it away from anybody else who has a different experience from me, because everyone has their own journey. And I know from women who have had multiple births that some births are just easy peasy Japanese and other births are really hard, you know. And it could be a 2-hour birth that's extremely difficult, and you could have like a 10-hour birth that's not difficult at all. But I look back at birth and I think, why was such a big deal made about birth and me having a vaginal birth in a hospital? Mm. Why didn't they just leave me alone? And I know the answer to this. I know it's because of they're worried about losing their job or getting sued or getting in trouble, and they won't get that if they put me into surgery. I understand that. But still, I can't help but ask the question. Birth is, it's so transformative. Mm. It's so peaceful and calm for me in that, you know, the whole birthing. I had a 13-hour birth in total from waters breaking. It was wonderful. And I think we overcomplicate birth and the whole everything. You've got to be perfect. You've got to do spinning babies. You've got to walk 10 kilometers. You've got to eat organic food. It's not like that. Your baby's going to come out, you know what I mean, most of the time. Yeah. It's just allow the woman space and belief in herself, and it will happen, because we've been doing it since forever, and our planet is overpopulated, and that is not because we have hospitals. That's because we birth pretty damn well. So I think that's pretty much all I have to share for my birthing journey with you.
Oh, I you know, I feel that your story is so important. You know, part of me wish that all doctors can hear your story, that all the people who make decisions around policies and guidelines and the system can hear this, because you are not unique in the sense that there is a rise in free birth, and not because women doesn't want to have a midwife with her, just like you, but because the whole system is geared up not to allow it. And so, you know, that's never how we solve a problem. Women need to be, you know, feeling fully confident that they will be supported in whatever choice they make. And when they go outside of the guidelines or policy or choose care that is not common, that, yes, she knows the risks and the benefits because that's what she needs to know. And then to respect that decision, even though it might not be comfortable for the care provider. And this is an ever-growing problem, not just in Australia, but around the world, that women who want to have good support, who want to feel safe in their home, for example, birthing, or in the hospital, anywhere, but they want to be respected. And a lot of women feel like they won't, and so they choose not to. And that is a terrible, terrible thing, I think.
Mm.
That women feel like they have no other choice. And then there's women that choose free birth, not from that, but just wanting that. And that is a different story. But when it's because you cannot get the help, I mean, that is outrageous.
It is. It's sad, because I know that there would be so many more home birth midwives out there who would be willing or wanting, or so many women, midwives stuck in the system who want to get out, but they can't, because what's the point in starting a business if, you know, you take on one client that doesn't fit the box, who you really want to help, and then they put you under investigation for a year, you know?
Years. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What's the point in sacrificing? And so I do appreciate, you know, all those midwives, or, you know, in the system and out of the system, who are doing the right thing for women, because, you know, obviously with me doing the line of work that I do now, all my circle of people are midwives and doulas. And so we went to the birth time with my doula girlfriends, and then we were talking to a midwife who's working in system, and so we're having these conversations, and, you know, everyone's so passionate, so many people are so passionate about the same thing, and, you know, so many people putting in so much time and effort sharing the messages and supporting women. And I think there is a big movement happening at the moment. And like you said, there is a rising free birthing, especially in Queensland, from what I've heard, because we have one of the hardest birthing systems. I mean, it is amazing. I've had friends who have birthed in South Australia who have, you know, had a cesarean, and the hospital's been pushing for them to have a VBAC, and they're like, no, I just want a cesarean. And I'm like, what? That is like the dream. But here in Queensland, I've had people come from Sydney who were like having like these calm, you know, hospital births with big babies, and they come to Queensland and they're like, you should be induced. And I'm like, but why? I've done it before with a big baby. Why is this going to be different? They're like, well, you should induce you. And they're like, but I don't get it. Mm. And I'm like, this is Queensland. I don't know. Obviously, it's very different, but I do see the same thing happening Australia-wide in the VBAC group as well. It's just the hot spots where you end up, you know, obviously. But it's an interesting, you know, space to be working in and being as a woman, you know, an interesting time.
Yeah.
There are options available and, you know, we can source support in other areas, you know. There is always the choice to birth in a hospital with an independent midwife as well.
Yeah, there are more options available than people realise. And the only way we can change the system is to demand change, you know, as consumers, as mothers, as women. And because it can't change from the inside, unfortunately, you know. I know that too well as a midwife, you know. And I really love that you say that, you know, there's so many women, so many midwives in the system who wanted to be different, you know, who are suffering under the workload that is inhumane a lot of the times, who are suffering under the paperwork demands that takes away from being with women, which is what we all want to do, and with baby. And, you know, we're all there because we care so deeply, and that, you know, we all know about the physiology, but so often we can't, we're bound to do other things. So we, you know, our hands are tied, or we have barriers, or the system telling us that other things are more important. So if you had a first time mama in front of you right now, who's about to have her first baby, what advice or pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
There's so much information to share, and I think about this all the time because I've got two sisters who haven't had children, and I constantly drop in little seeds of information, like, please implant in your brain. I think the biggest thing is they need to understand that the system is like a sausage factory, and that it isn't necessarily set up to be the safest birthing situation for you. You can have a safe birth in there, but you need to understand how you can have a safe birth. And that is through a number of different ways. You know, you need to have the right support. You need to have the right care provider. You need to understand birth. You need to, you know, have the right environment. But you need to make that happen. And so I would just, the best information I can say to you, because even if you make a mistake with your first baby, and like I did, I won't call it a mistake because it's a journey. You know, you can't ever know. Like with my third baby, I did everything I could possible. I told my doulas, I don't want to hear you, your fear. I don't want you in my space. I don't want you to say anything. It doesn't matter how many times I said, look, I really need to make it quite clear. I want an undeserved birth. You can't control what people are going to do. You can't control every outcome. You can't make something happen. I couldn't make me not have a postpartum hemorrhage. You know, nobody can give you the magical answer to have the birth that you want. So take the journey and just make the best choices that you can with the knowledge that you have now, and don't be hard on yourself for any outcomes that don't play out the way that you would hope for, or for it not being the way you wanted it to be because you didn't have the knowledge. And always be true to yourself. So always do what you feel is the safest for you and your baby. Don't be pressured into doing something because someone's fearing you into that choice, or you want to be looked as a certain way, you want to please somebody. Always do what you feel is right. That's the best advice I can give somebody.
Beautiful.
At this point in time.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Ashley, for sharing your birth story. I am so pleased to hear that you had such a beautiful healing with your third birth, with the whole unfolding that didn't go to plan, because that's the thing. And I think that's the key from your stories, that yes, you had a natural birth, and birth happens in its ways, you know, it's and it was such a gift somehow that you did have a bleed, that you did have that retained placenta, because then you can go back to that hospital and have that healing experience that wouldn't have happened if that didn't happen.
Absolutely. And now I go past that hospital and I feel safe. So if I had to go back in there with one of my children before, I may have been, very hesitant about wanting to take my children in there, but now I feel I can take my child in there, or if I need to, I can go in there and I can advocate for myself because I've done it now and they have respected me. So that it was wonderful. So, and we can take away there's always positives in everything. So that's one of the best things about life, isn't it? Just finding the positives and sticking with that.
Mm. Thank you so much. I won't
change any of my situations either. So,
yeah. Well, it's led you to this, and you now, you know, are a host of a beautiful podcast.
No, it's a blessing. Yeah. Like the whole thing is a blessing. Now I'm working with women. I'm making a change. I'm making a difference. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm working from home with my babies, my child's homeschooling. If I hadn't had this experience, I probably would be back at work and my child would be at school and I wouldn't see my children and I wouldn't be living a good life that I am now. So it is a pure blessing, yeah, in disguise.
Yeah, and it's so often like that, isn't it? Like before we just end on this, like I feel like this is the theme in life. When you have hardship, you know, you come out this polished diamond, so something cracks you open, you know, and you get to see life from a different perspective, and you might have gone down into the deep and then you surface and now life is more magical because you've been down there. And
yeah,
beautiful.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for coming on the Natural Birth Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please share it. Grade it on iTunes and leave a comment. If you want to connect on social media, you can find me on Facebook as The Spiritual Midwife or on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Thank you for listening.